fourth case, the United States versus Corona Gonzalez. Ms. Tansey.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I represent Mr. Corona Gonzalez. He is appealing his sentence because, first, the District Court committed procedural error by relying on a clearly erroneous fact in deciding his sentence, and second, because his sentence is substantively unreasonable. It's a pretty straightforward case. Both parties agree that there was an error. They just disagree as to whether Mr. Corona Gonzalez is entitled to any sort of remedy for this error. Put simply, the District Court here committed a procedural error because it relied on a very aggravating fact, specifically that Mr. Corona Gonzalez was previously deported from this country and returned in sentencing Mr. Corona Gonzalez.
The fact that he was never deported did not factor into the calculations of what the current guideline was in this case.
It did not factor into the guidelines, no. It was taken into account, presumably, as a 3553 factor.
Yeah, okay.
This is subject only to plain error review. However, our position is that this error affected Mr. Corona Gonzalez's substantial rights such that this court should exercise its discretion to remand for resentencing.
To me, this seems like the perfect case for why we have a stringent plain error review standard, because if the lawyer or the defendant would have whispered to the lawyer and said, I was never deported, they would have said that to Judge Hamilton, and he would have said, oh, well, I misread. I was interpreting what happened to his father or something, whatever that was, and that would have been the end of it. It would have been a correctable error in a couple of seconds.
Unfortunately, his attorney did not object to it. It did come at kind of an odd time. The issue of whether Mr. Corona Gonzalez was deported was never discussed beforehand. It wasn't a matter at issue. It just came into mention when Judge Hamilton explained his rationale for Mr. Corona Gonzalez's sentence after he had actually imposed the sentence, which may have led to nobody objecting to the error. But specifically, when he was explaining his rationale for the sentence, he mentioned not once but twice in a relatively short explanation that Mr. Corona Gonzalez was previously deported. Specifically, he said, Mr. Corona Gonzalez, you had already been deported from this country before and returned in order to deal drugs. Then soon thereafter, he said, when I look at you as an individual, your history and characteristics, what I see is somebody, as I mentioned, deported and returned in order to deal drugs. And the explanation of the sentence is relatively short. It's only 388 words, two pages of transcript. And this is really, aside from the crime committed, the only factor that's really taken into consideration. And that's why we feel that he should be reversed even on plain error review, because the factor was clearly significant in the judge's mind in determining Mr. Corona Gonzalez's sentence. And this is aggravated in light of the fact that Mr. Corona Gonzalez has a really minimal criminal history, consists of a handful of misdemeanors, four traffic offenses, and one misdemeanor disorderly conduct specifically. He has only one other arrest on his record, and that was for driving under a suspended license. So we have a really limited criminal history, all of which occurred when he was 19 years old or younger, and all of which occurred a full 5 years before the arrest in the instant case. He never spent more than 30 days in jail. He was mostly on unsupervised probation. So in this context, the assumption of a deportation and reentry, essentially the assumption of a federal crime of illegal reentry, really, really has an effect on the judge's consideration of the defendant's personal characteristics and the defendant as a whole. It basically assumes a federal crime into a history that had none. And the really troubling thing is, like you said, it appears that the judge may have misattributed a statement in the PSR addressing Mr. Corona Gonzalez's father to Mr. Corona Gonzalez. And why that's troubling is that that statement says that Mr. Corona Gonzalez's father was deported after he was convicted of a drug crime. And the danger there is that Mr. Corona-Gonzalez here is a first-time, convicted as a first-time drug offender, nothing but misdemeanors in his record. And you have a situation where the district judge may have assumed not only one but two federal crimes and more importantly, a prior drug conviction into Mr. Corona-Gonzalez's record, which is troubling here. Our position.
Well, he also apparently assumed that the man had re-entered the country to deal with drugs.
Correct, Judge. Assumed he was dealing drugs, was deported on that basis, and then re-entered the country so that he might continue to deal drugs. And that's our concern. We feel that this affected Mr. Corona-Gonzalez's substantial rights simply because the person sentenced here may not have been Mr. Corona-Gonzalez, to put it simply. Mr. Corona-Gonzalez was in this country illegally, but he entered with his family at 15 years old. He's never been deported, and he just has a handful of misdemeanors on his record.
What do you say to the fact that the defendant received a really fairly moderate sentence within the construct of the guidelines, which, of course, are advisory, but
absolutely
within the construct of the guidelines?
Well, here, first of all, you know, even if Mr. Corona-Gonzalez received any time more than he otherwise would have received, that would affect any time, extra time spent in prison affects his substantial rights. And beyond that, you know, in the cases most similar to this case decided by the circuit, those are cases where the defendant was sentenced according to the, you know, a different procedural error, the wrong guideline range. This court has remanded even though the sentence was within both the correct and the incorrect guideline range. And the last thing I'd point out also is there is a case I cited in my brief, U.S. v. Jean, out of the 11th Circuit, in the context of the court relying on a clearly erroneous fact where the court said, you know, it doesn't matter that this sentence is within his guideline range if the judge relied on a fact that wasn't true. And here, too, again, I would point out that Mr. Corona-Gonzalez had a very minimal criminal history, yet because of the number of misdemeanors he was put in.
How have we handled situations like this in the past when they've come up on plain error? What's your best case?
The best case I have are the ones would be either United States v. Garrett, United States v. Wallace, which those were plain error cases where the sentencing guidelines were wrong, nobody noticed, they came up on review, and they were reversed on plain error, and this court specifically said that that you know, it should be remanded on plain error unless this court has reason to believe that the error, in those cases it was the wrong guideline range, that the error did not affect the particular sentence. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Jennings.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Jennings on behalf of the United States.
Let me ask you this. These kind of cases, why? I mean, clearly Judge Hamilton thought he was deported. He mentioned it twice. That's a kind of an important thing. Why would the government here just agree with enter into a stipulation to go back for resentencing and let the judge sentence without regard to that? It's so much less complicated than filing briefs and coming up here to argue in Chicago on a plain air review like this. You agree that that's a pretty important thing when a judge tells a defendant, boy, you were deported and you came back and started dealing meth here. But I understand, on the other hand, the sentence is pretty modest. So.
Exactly, Your Honor. In looking at this case, the United States does concede there was error. What the United States cannot concede in light of the facts of this case is that there was any prejudice to the defendant. Prejudice to the appellant is one of the requirements before any relief would be appropriate. In this case, while there was error, it was plain, the question is, was there an effect on the substantial rights of the defendant? For the appellant to meet that burden, and it is the appellant's burden to show that.
I understand all that, but my question is why not just agree with the defense to go back to the district court and say there was an error at the sentencing? He was never deported. Maybe the judge will say, well, it doesn't make any difference. I'm going to impose the same sentence.
Well, we would
and
note,
it's
Your
all
Honor.
Over.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Then
Your
it's
Honor.
All over. And if the judge says, oh, now that I know that the sentence is going to be different, then there's a miscarriage of justice.
Because, Your Honor, in light of the facts of this case, there is no reason to believe that the court would have any different outcome.
Well, Ms. Jennings, you said in your brief, if I recall, that deterrence was what the judge was worried about here. Now, if I've got a guy who committed another drug offense, left, was booted out of the country, came in with the intent to deal drugs again, I'm not going to hit him a lot harder to deter him than if I am if the guy has been here since the age of 15, never got deported, never committed another offense, and in fact got caught. This is his first time.
You would think so, Your Honor. On the other hand, Judge Hamilton did not do that. Judge Hamilton, rather than go to the high end of the guidelines, which I believe is reasonable for someone previously deported, rather than issue a 293-month sentence, instead, Judge Hamilton went towards the very bottom of the guideline range.
That's what you think is reasonable. We don't know what Judge Hamilton might have done if he hadn't known, if this guy hadn't come sneaking across the border after he'd been told not to, with the intent to commit another drug offense.
Well, what we do know, Your Honor, because Judge Hamilton was very clear on this, he believed that the advisory guideline range was the appropriate range based upon the seriousness of the offense, not based on any immigration history, any other factors about this particular defendant. What Judge Hamilton was very clear on was the fact that he felt, in light of this drug particularly, that methamphetamine, I believe he termed it one of the most dangerous, most addictive drugs, in dealing in methamphetamine while armed, he said, well, there might be some question about other drugs and whether relating to other drugs the guidelines might be too strict. He said, with respect to methamphetamine, as dangerous, as addictive as it is, the guidelines seem to me quite reasonable in terms of protecting the public and reflecting the seriousness of the offense. So we know, because Judge Hamilton was very clear, that his framework for this 235 to 293 months was based not upon any immigration history. It was based upon the fact that the appellant was convicted of dealing methamphetamine while armed with a loaded handgun in his waistband. So that's the framework, 235 to 293. Then the judge considered the other factors. That's how immigration...
Mentioned him twice.
He did mention it twice. That's correct, Your Honor. But to meet that third prong, was there an effect on the substantial rights? Was there prejudice? That is there something in the record that would lead us to believe the outcome would have been different but for this error? What we would have to believe is that Judge Hamilton would have found the fact that this appellant... I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering if you're correct in saying that the judge simply looked at the nature of the offense and decided the guidelines are appropriate. He says this is a case, by way of explanation, in which the court finds the guidelines provide a sound and reasonable basis for imposing the sentence to accomplish purposes of Section 355, looking first at the nature and circumstances of the offense. And he goes right into Mr. Corona Gonzalez, you had already been deported from this country, etc. He talks about nature and circumstances of the offense. He's including and giving top billing to the fact this man been deported.
He does in that part of the transcript, Your Honor. I believe it's possibly a little higher on that. I believe it's the same page, that page 20 from the appendix, where the judge goes into a discussion of drugs, whether guidelines are excessive, I believe was his word. His statement was, I don't have any concerns with respect to methamphetamine, as dangerous, as addictive as it is. Those guidelines seem to me quite reasonable in terms of protecting the public and reflecting the seriousness of the offense. The guidelines he found to be a reasonable basis based upon the fact that methamphetamine, in his mind, made it if not more serious, definitely as serious a crime as the guidelines would lend one to believe. If
he
going
mentions that in the paragraph after he talks about deportation, and then immediately after he talks, he made the paragraph to which you refer, he goes back to the issue of deportation.
He does mention deportation twice. To meet that third prong, would there have been an effect on the sentence but for this error? What you would have to believe, Your Honor, is that Judge Hamilton would have considered it some kind of a mitigating factor, a basis to downward vary from the guidelines, which he found to be very reasonable, if he knew that, no, you know what, the appellant was not a previously deported alien. He was simply an illegal alien here dealing drugs. Is that a mitigating factor? Is that reasonable to believe Judge Hamilton would have found that in mitigation and varied below those guidelines, which he found very reasonable?
Ms. Jennings, I ask you this because it might impact on my estimation, at least, of how to employ the plain error doctrine. Many moons ago when the Navy was trying to make me into a prosecutor, it kept telling me, protect your record, protect your record, protect your record. There was a United States attorney sitting in that courtroom. The judge twice misstates the record on sentencing. And a U.S. attorney sat there like this, said nothing, when it would have been an easier, very easy thing for us to say, pardon me, Your Honor, you've mentioned deportation, and that is not in this case. Would you make it clear on the record you're not relying on that? Nothing was done. So in terms of particularly the last two prongs of the plain error doctrine, doesn't the United States bear some responsibility for the situation we have here today?
Your Honor, I would agree. The Assistant United States Attorney handling any case before the district court has the obligation to the best of its ability, ensure that the judge is operating off of correct and true facts. And it is very unfortunate that this misstatement was not picked up on. I would note that there was one individual in that courtroom uniquely qualified to know, without any reference to extraneous documents, whether he had been deported before. And that individual, the appellant, said nothing. This is not a shy and retiring.
Did he speak English or Spanish? Do we know that?
He used an interpreter at trial. He did not need an interpreter in speaking with the agents post-arrest.
No, but he had an interpreter when he was being sentenced. So maybe how do we know that the interpreter, translator, conveyed the significance of that word deportation to him?
Well, we know that because every interpreter or translator that comes before the district court swears an oath to do that, Your Honor.
This all goes back to why don't you go back? Why didn't you agree? Don't you ever do that, to go back to the sentencing judge, say there was a mistake here? Let's correct it. If you're right that the sentence would have been the same, the government isn't hurt.
In the appropriate circumstance, I would do that personally in my cases. If I felt there had been some prejudice and that a resentencing or at least a limited remand to that judge, there was this mistake, it should be addressed. Yes, but that is not this case, Your Honor, given, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Ms. Jennings, in that respect, going back to the remark that your colleague made on behalf of the defendant, she said, well, this was a little bit of an extraordinary situation the way it was conducted. And as I recall, the trial judge here imposed sentence and then told the defendant why. You've just been sent away for that long a period of time, and now the judge is getting into an explanation of it. You might be a little bit less than assertive at that particular moment in your life.
That's possible, Your Honor. He did have two opportunities to address the issue when the judge brought it up twice. We know this is not an individual hesitant to speak with the court. The docket demonstrates he had submitted correspondence to the court. He spoke up to the court that day on two occasions. One, speaking about his criminal history. Second, in addressing the court on sentencing, this is not an individual who we have any reason to believe either didn't understand what was going on due to some translation problem or was hesitant to speak to the court because he frequently did. With that, I do see my time is up. I thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Ms. Danson.
I just wanted to circle back to a couple points very quickly. First, the United States Attorney mentioned that Judge Hamilton also did discuss at length the crime that the defendant was convicted for. And of course he did. That's a very important factor in the sentence. But he is also required to consider other factors under 3553. And here it was very clear that he additionally considered that the defendant was previously deported. Also, I wanted to quickly address the proof required in a situation such as this. As I pointed out earlier, in this court's prior cases, the ones that were most similar to this one in which you discussed applying the wrong sentencing guidelines range to a defendant, this court did say that the case should be remanded even under plain error where this court had no reason to suspect that the trial judge did not rely on the information. And here I think it's quite the opposite. There's a lot of evidence that the trial judge did rely on the information. He said twice in a very short period of time, a very short explanation that this false fact that Mr. Corona Gonzalez was previously deported. And I would further say that, you know, in this situation, it's kind of nonsensical to ask the defendant to prove, if you will, that this fact wasn't taken into consideration. No one objected to it. There's no reason for the trial judge in this situation, in a plain error situation, to say, and just for the record, if X, Y, and Z that nobody objected to were different, then I would have sentenced either the same way or differently. So unless Your Honors have any further questions, rest on the briefs. Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. Ms. Tansey, you and is it Ms. Reitmeier? You have the additional thanks to the court for assuming the responsibility in this appeal. Thank you. Case is taken under advisement.